Welcome back to the show. Todd Zwillick with you today. Earlier in the show, we talked about encryption, how and when the government can watch, specifically on mobile devices. There's a much broader debate, though, about communications on the internet. Who controls the shape and the space of cyberspace itself? Yesterday, we talked about how the internet of today and of the future is not the boundless, unregulated sea of free ideas and speech that we once envisioned. Instead, it's largely become a marketplace where the rules and the borders are shaped by corporations who operate in their own interest. Here's Scott Malcolmson, author of SplinterNet, How Geopolitics and Commerce Are Fragmenting the World Wide Web. He was on the show yesterday.
I think it's shaped more like Google and Apple and not so much like the U.S. Constitution.
Apple and Google and other companies, too, deciding the shape of the internet. And at the same time, governments who want to control or watch the flow of information. Here's Scott Malcolmson again.
What happens next is political rather than technical. What happens next is that people organize in order to try and defend or take back a right of expression over the internet.
So-called digital dissenters are part of what Scott Malcolmson is talking about there, a growing group of activists and thinkers who want users to take back control of cyberspace from corporations, from marketers, and from surveillance. One of those digital dissenters joins me now. Astra Taylor is a documentary filmmaker and author of The People's Platform, Taking Back Power and Culture in the Digital Age. Astra Taylor, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you and your cohorts, I guess, have been called dissenters or humanists or team human, even Luddites by some people. Describe this movement and its main objections to the shape of today's internet.
Yeah, I think even if you go back 5 or 6 years, a lot of the discussions about the internet were very triumphalist. Social media was going to bring down the old media model and usher in a democratized media era where the sort of everyday person could triumph over established interests. And it's interesting because in the last few years, the conversation's gotten a bit more doubtful, right? There have been revelations from Snowden about government surveillance, and there have been revelations about labor abuses from companies like Apple, or even the discussion that's going on about the way platforms like Uber treat their workers. Examples of Facebook's emotional contagion experiment, all of these things that have kind of disillusioned people. I think what the cohort I'm part of, or at least the purpose of my book, The People's Platform, was really to say it actually, we don't have to get mired in disappointment. You know, there could be another way. And in fact, The People's Platform as a title, I was drawn to it because it's kind of sardonic on the one hand, but it's also aspirational. The internet isn't a people's platform. It's corporatized all the way down. In fact, there's no such thing as a public internet, but it could be. So in that sense, I'm definitely not anti-technological. The Luddites are mistaken as being anti-tech, right? They were these textile workers who broke the looms in the early 19th century. And so you can kind of see them as these people who were, you know, on Team Flintstone as opposed to Team Jetson or something. They hated the future. They hated technology. But actually, they were protesting their exploitation and the fact that, you know, machines were being used to drive down their wages and make their lives more difficult. So I think in that sense, perhaps I am a Luddite, if you look at it not as being anti-tech, but really being anti-inequality and anti-exploitation.
So then taking back the internet and the free expression and the free movement and non-corporatization that you think it was meant to be, or at least envisioned to be when it was first strung together, when those computers were strung together, how does that happen? What do you envision people doing to get out from under Apple and Google and Snapchat and Facebook?
Yeah, people have to organize. And this is the thing. One thing I try to emphasize is that, you know, we've sort of been here before. When we talk about the internet, it's like change and revolution and disruption. And we really emphasize the novelty. You know, how amazing is it that we can leave comments for our friends when we used to only have a few channels or a few hundred channels to choose from? Or, you know, back in the day when it was only the radio or the television to entertain you. And it's true, the internet and associated technologies do have a really remarkable infrastructure. You know, the fact that it can be many to many. It's remarkable. We all love the internet. But at the same time, there's a lot of continuity with the past system. A lot of the problems of the old media model have carried over. And I'm thinking about centralization, consolidation, and commercialism mainly. You know, the fact that, yeah, sure, we have these personalized devices, but they're all connected to a sort of very centralized, opaque backend that few of us understand. The fact that there's been a return of monopolies and also a vertical integration. So you can see a company like Amazon that doesn't just sell books, but it's the bookstore and it offers web hosting services, right? And commercialism, the fact that we have this remarkable new technology and it is funded through this retrograde model of advertising. It's like we've gone back to the past, to the old days of, our news being sponsored by Camel cigarettes and stuff. We all see the return of branded content and advertising dollars fund this whole thing, just like the television era.
And I wanted to ask you about that, mm-hmm. because people complain, of course, about when you use Facebook because it's free, that means you're the product, your information, your likes and dislikes. None of that is new. We've seen this before. We've been the product on television for decades. Free ads targeted to the audience the content is designed to attract.
Exactly. So in a sense, I'm saying the disruption didn't go deep enough. You know, I want more disruption. I want us to disrupt those underlying business models, because that's the problem, the economic system our technologies are embedded in, not the technology itself. And the fact that the old business models have essentially carried over, and in fact, they've metastasized, right? So now advertising is even more of the funding source for more of the things we're doing, you know, not just for the television shows, but for our basic communications and for our places that we organize as citizens and you know, where we're supposed to learn. We talk about Google as a library, but really that's quite misleading, because it's not a library. It's not publicly funded the way a library is, and it doesn't exist for, to maintain an archive of knowledge. An advertising company. So my point is that what to do is to look back to the past, to some of the old solutions that people embraced, which was to push back on advertisers, to use antitrust to break up monopolies, to institute baseline privacy laws, to open up spaces of non-commercial media. So I think the toolkit for today is actually the toolkit we used in the past. We just need to update it for a digital age.
What about individuals? Let's get practical for one second. Things like in private browsing, disabling cookies, the types of things that advertisers and corporations use to track your likes and dislikes so that they know how to advertise to you. Is it worth disabling those things?
I think it is worth disabling those things. Though there is a paradox, because right now, if we don't pay for things directly, then the problem is that we've handed over the funding of culture online to advertisers. So we in a way have to either pay with our personal data, or we have to pay with money if we want to see certain things exist in the world. So I think, there is the power of the purse for people. You know, I, for example, pay for my internet service. I don't use Gmail because I don't want to be ultimately paying with my information and having my emails be used to target ads to me. I guess I'm a bit wary of privacy being something that only the well-off can afford, privacy becoming a kind of luxury good. And I'm slightly wary of the idea that we can chop our way into a better world. That's why I really do think we actually need to band together as citizens and demand some structural changes, like baseline privacy law that would affect everybody instead of those of us who have the wherewithal, protecting ourselves one by one online.
Pushing back against a corporate-based, advertising-based, tracking-based internet. Astra Taylor is a documentary filmmaker and author of The People's Platform, Taking Back Power and Culture in the Digital Age. Astra Taylor, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.